Hello, I am back with a third season. And wow, so much has changed since season two. Mainly in that I've been on my own journey through pregnancy and have joined this crazy, incredible club of motherhood. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Pip, a practicing NHS midwife and enthusiast of all things women's wellness. I have a somewhat relentless passion for ensuring women are empowered with real, honest, and reliable information and support throughout their pregnancy. Because my goodness, pregnancy is such a powerful time in a woman's life that is often miraculous and challenging in equal measures. Over the upcoming weekly episodes, I am joined by many leading experts to bring you the evidence-based information and top tips to navigating your pregnancy and motherhood journey that you need to hear. Needless to say, I had my notebook at hand when recording this season, and I would recommend the same for you too. I hope you're ready for the giggles, knowledge bombs, and empowering chats to commence. But before I get quizzing our guests on this season, I have some questions for you. Have you found yourself with unanswered pregnancy questions? Have you been guilty of trying to navigate the rabbit warren of inaccurate information on the internet? Do you feel that extra support and guidance would be useful to you? If you answered yes to any of these, then fear not. My exclusive Your Pregnancy Journey course is for you. Spaces are limited, so if expert guidance through each stage of your pregnancy and birth preparation, and a community support group with 24 access to asking questions sounds like it's for you, then head over to www.midwifepip.com now to check it out. And I look forward to getting to know you better and ensuring your pregnancy journey is the most empowering and positive it can be. You'll also find information all about my antenatal course options on my website. And any questions about choosing the right course for you, then please get in touch via the contact page, and I'll be there to help you navigate the right choice. This podcast is sponsored by Baby Tula, a global leader in ergonomic baby carriers, designed distinctly for you. Baby wearing has many physical and emotional benefits that strengthens the bond between you and your little one. Baby Tula is committed to supporting that bond and empowering parents to keep doing what they love. With a large selection of carrier types, stunning prints, and unique materials, they meet the needs of families at all different ages and stages, from newborn to beyond. Each Baby Tula carrier is designed to make baby wearing feel fun, easy, and intuitive. As a listener of the Midwife Pip podcast, you can explore the world with Baby Tula and enjoy an exclusive 15% off their entire baby carrier range by using the code PIPLOVESTULA. Only available at babytula.co.uk and for a limited time only, so get shopping. You navigate your way through pregnancy, birth your baby like a total warrior, and voila, you have entered a new club of parenthood. A whole new adventure to be explored with a whole heap of uncertainty. The first few months of your little one's life are so precious, and every parent is on a mission to help nurture their new baby in the healthiest way to enable them to develop and thrive. So what should we actually be doing with our new baby in these earliest days? And how can we help have a positive start to parenting? Fear not, we have an expert joining us this week to share her top tips on those early parenting days. I don't know about you, but I'm getting my notepad and pen at the ready for this one. Jen Butler is a registered nurse and midwife, maternal and child health nurse, lactation and sleep consultant, and Circle of Security facilitator. Jen's work is to support mums and dads in getting to know, understand, and support their baby and toddler so they can love being a parent. So Jen, welcome, and thank you so much for giving up the time to join us on the podcast today. I know you're an exceptionally busy lady, and joining us from overseas, we've managed to navigate some impressive time zones. So yeah, thank you for that.
My pleasure, and I'm so excited to be on.
Amazing. It sounds like we've got an absolute expert with all of your qualifications. So I am going to be picking your brains, expecting our little one in a week's time, plus or minus. So yeah, I am all ears for this chat. So thank you so much, Jen. Now, I know that recently, Jen, you have been through these early parenting days yourself. So not just supporting all of those families out there, but really experiencing it. And it's very much pending for me at the moment. So one of the things I really wanted to kick us off with, because we hear about it all the time, and that is the idea of routines and the reality of this. In fact, I found myself recently explaining to my husband that the baby is not going to know the difference between day and nighttime when he's first born, a groundbreaking moment for him. But what can we expect in those early days? And when can some of perhaps those elements or ideas of routine start to be introduced?
Yeah, and that is, like, it's such a great question. I think that, like, even just going in with that mindset around the fact that days and nights are reversed is one of the best things that you can understand in the newborn days. So as you mentioned, like, the most common sleep patterns that we see in the newborn is that day-night reversal, and it's usually the first 6 weeks. It tends to resolve itself after about 6 weeks and I often refer to it to families as your baby wakes up. And it's like you've got this super sleepy newborn that sleeps the day away but then tends to party all night, which, you know, it usually then means the days are easier and the nights are trickier. And then when that shift happens, it's really like your baby's more awake during the day, and sometimes then those naps can become a bit more challenging during the day, but those nighttime sleep cycles start to consolidate. So I think that the biggest thing around routine is starting to reshape the word routine in that first 3 months and looking at it more like rhythms. So, because, I mean, I think when we think about routine, we usually think about times on it, don't we? Where it's like 7 o'clock wake and we feed at this time and we feed at this time. And there's lots of resources out there that will talk about that in the early days, but it's not super realistic, I would say. Because the thing is our little babies, especially in the first six to 12 weeks, really, we're establishing breastfeeding if that's how we're choosing to feed. And rather than feeding to clocks, we have to feed to the cues of our baby. And we can't time that. You can't say, all right, at 8 o'clock, we're going to feed. Because if bub needs a feed, that's 5 minutes after you've just fed, or it's just not going to work. And so then sleep times are going to then be quite, you know, unpredictable in that sense too. So I think going in with the mindset that strict routine is not what we're aiming for in those newborn days, but you can start to follow some rhythm, and you can start it from the get-go where it looks a little bit like that feed, short play, sleep, you know? So it's not so much timed. It's more about the rhythm in those first 3 months than the actual, you know, let's look at specific sleep times per se.
I love that. And actually, it just brings to mind the idea that parenting doesn't have like an exact science, right? It's everyone's unique, mum, dad, baby, whoever those carers might be. Actually, we can't put a kind of stringent science to it. We're all individual, which is wonderful. It's what makes the world go round. But yeah, it does mean that perhaps we have to be a little bit more flexible.
Flexible's the bit. Like, if you can go in with that mindset of flexibility, it's going to free you as a parent.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. That's really, really helpful. So I guess it's that understanding, isn't it, that actually for your baby in the womb, they don't know the difference between daytime, nighttime, when you're asleep, when you're awake. So they kind of can't follow that with us. And it's the same when they're born, I guess.
Yeah, it is. Amazing. It takes that time to adjust.
Yeah. And so did you say around 6 weeks is when perhaps you could start to think a little bit more about some kind of routine? I mean, it's not going to be stringent, is it? But
That's right. I would say 6 weeks is a good time to start getting quite like it's about being aware of awake windows. So if your listeners haven't heard about awake windows, it's about looking at the developmental time that a baby is capable of staying awake at any given time. And we know these as averages. Like, again, as you said, it's plus or minus. You know, there could be a baby that can stay awake longer by 15 minutes than what the average is, and some that can't handle being awake as long. So, you know, I think from 6 weeks, we know on average that a 6 week old can stay awake for an hour and 15 minutes, give or take 15 minutes either side, generally speaking. So that's when you can start to get a little bit more, okay, I might wake bub by 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning, and then I'll feed. And then I know that roughly an hour and 15 minutes later, bub's going to need to go to sleep. And so that's how we then start to create a little bit of, you know, more predictability. It's still not going to be a perfect day. You'll have your perfect days, but you'll also have your days that are completely all over the place. But even just understanding that is what's going to help to give a little bit of rhythm and more predictability to your day.
I love that, Jen. I'm definitely going to bear that in mind when I try and time a hot coffee. I'm going to be like, right, I should now have this period. I'll let you know how I go on that. Oh, I love it. Hopefully not too many microwave teas and coffees then.
Yes, exactly. Iced coffees.
Yeah, which actually the weather we've got here at the moment is perfect.
Yeah, now, right.
Yeah. The other thing, Jen, that definitely crops up when parents are navigating their journey is crying. Now, babies do seem to cry a lot, and we are all human. And I guess at times this can be a massive challenge for new parents, especially with your first baby, when it is sort of a whole new thing that you're navigating. And even perhaps cause some frustration or some tension, especially when you're sleep deprived. And we know when we're sleep deprived, we are not the best versions of ourselves. But how can we try to kind of navigate crying with our new babies? Kind of, I guess, determining why they're crying and maybe being a bit more understanding to try and mitigate some of our frustrations.
Because that's what the biggest problem with crying is. It's what it triggers in us. And as you said, when you're sleep deprived, when you've had a long day, of course you're going to be triggered. Like, you know, and I think first of all, it's about understanding that it's okay to feel something and to be triggered and to recognize that you're never going to always just cruise through and go, yeah, you know, like, oh, this is fine. It's okay. This is what I always wanted. You know, like that sort of, it's a guilt thing that comes into play, I think, when you think, oh, like, oh, I can't stand this. And then you feel guilty for feeling those feelings. So first of all, it's about understanding that every single parent gets triggered. You are not alone. Every single parent gets triggered at some point. We all do have different thresholds. And throw in sleep deprivation, absolutely. So I think when it comes to looking at crying, first of all, about reshaping that mindset around, okay, crying is communication. What is my baby trying to tell me? They're trying to tell me something. And yeah, it's really tricky to be able to actually break that down. But I usually sort of look at, like, babies actually have pretty basic needs. They want a full tummy. They don't like being overtired and overstimulated. They don't like being, you know, dirty and wet and all those sorts of things. And they also need that opportunity to have emotional release. So sometimes when we know, if you've fed your baby, if you know that they've had a sleep or they're not tired or overstimulated, if you know they're clean and dry, then sometimes it is actually a space for them to actually let out that bit of emotion with you supporting them without that, you know, that expectation that you need to stop things. And wind is another one, I think. It's like, I would say that they're the biggest five things that are going to be making your baby cry. So if you can sort of work through systematically, you know, I just fed them. I know that they're full. I put, you know, they've just woken up from a sleep. I've just changed their bottom. Then it's sort of almost a matter of ticking the boxes, so to speak. So that just helps to sort of break down the how-to of navigating that crying, but bringing in that mindset stuff too of, okay, you know, this is okay if I feel this way. Can I get a hand to give me a break from the crying so it's not you the only one having to deal with that?
That's a good tip. I was laughing to myself there, Jen, when you were talking through those basic needs. I was thinking, that sounds really similar to a heavily pregnant woman. We're in the same
boat. Make sure we're fed. Make sure we're tired. Not tired.
I was like, yeah, sometimes that's have a little emotional let out.
Exactly. Let us cry and support us while we do so.
I love it. That's really useful. So we can kind of run through those pointers and try and navigate. And I love what you said, actually, Jen, about it's their way of communicating. We forget they can't sit and have a conversation and say, Mum, I'd quite like a snack. You know, that is their only way of communicating anything with you is through their cry. So yeah, not panicking. I think quite often, Jen, I don't know about you, but when I see parents and their babies are unsettled and crying, they're really panicking. Actually, that's because they're doing something wrong, or they're not feeding their baby enough, or they're, you know, not giving them what they need. But actually, like you say, that is just their way of almost talking to you. So it's not a guilt thing. It's not that you're doing something wrong. That is just your baby's way of speaking to you.
Yeah. And sometimes it can actually help to reframe it like, all right, you know, you're not actually saying words, but you are talking. And it's like, all right, this cry, what are you saying? And almost like, you know, responding like, what are you saying to me? And I found that, you know, Georgie's my third baby who's 14 weeks now. And the crying's definitely got easier because I can decipher, you know, and I can sort of look at it a bit like take a step back and be like, what's wrong with you, Bubba? What are you trying to say to me? Like, you know, almost speaking to them like that. And that can really help to take the pressure off.
Yeah, that's a nice idea, especially if you're feeling frustrated, I guess. And I guess the more frustrated mum gets or dad or carer, the more frustrated baby gets, and then you end up in that like awful vicious cycle of just like disaster. You just need to take those breaths, don't you, and find a little bit of headspace to deal with it.
Absolutely. Like, babies feed off mum and dad, so trying to keep calm, it's not always easy. But that's where tapping out and stepping out and getting someone who's not so, you know, frustrated in or guilty or whatever that emotion that's coming up for you, that's a really good opportunity to do that so that bub isn't feeding off those vibes.
Yeah, definitely. And that's such a good point, Jen, in terms of asking for help. And I think that's something we totally need to discuss more of and encourage more of. We seem to have ended up in this culture where asking for help is frowned upon, or if you're asking for help, then it's a sign that you can't cope or a weakness. And actually, being a parent isn't something that was meant to happen on your own, you know. Bring back those days where the whole village got around this new mum and you didn't have to worry about anything other than recovering and feeding your baby. You know, meals were brought to you, the housework didn't matter. We totally need to look back in that aspect a little bit more, I think, and take some of that pressure off.
Oh, 100%. And you want to know, this, it's taken me 3 pregnancies to get there, but this time I said to myself, I am going to treat the first 40 days like I'm going to rest as much as possible. I actually organized a meal train. So I texted my sister and my mum and I said, can you please make some meals? So, you know, like how, like I didn't put a time frame on it, and they cooked so much. I didn't have to cook my first meal until Georgie was 8 weeks old, I think. And then it was a shock to the system. I was like, what's cooking business? But I actually, you know, I asked, like, they might have done it on their own, but they might not have. And I thought, I'm not going to risk it. I've got a big load. I've got 2 other kids to look after. I've got a newborn, you know, I'm just going to ask. And so, yeah, I think it is about dropping the pride and just reaching out and saying, what can I do? I can't rely on people just hopefully helping me. I need to actually instigate this. I need to make this happen. So, game changer.
That is a great tip. And actually, I bet they love doing that for you. I bet they love knowing they were doing something that was actually practically really, really helping you. But often people are reluctant to do it if you haven't asked because they don't want to cause offense. But actually, by you saying, can you do this for me? They probably thought, brilliant. I've got like permission to do something really helpful.
Exactly. And like, my dad has still been bringing meals because he just really gotten this, like, you know, this vibe of just cooking. And I was like, I am fine with that, Dad. You just keep on bringing the meals.
Yeah, I love that. To any of my friends or family listening, feel free to stock my freezer. I am not opposed to help. That is a great tip. And actually, to anyone listening who's got a expectant friend or family, I suppose, this is your permission to cook them a lasagna.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because I will never not take food around for a friend as a gift now. I think it is golden when you're a new parent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess if you haven't got friends or family near, there's loads of really great like online companies now that deliver meals. And actually some of them, if you look at the ingredients, they are as good as a home cooked meal. It's obviously a more expensive option. But if that's something that is feasible to you and that takes a massive pressure off and makes sure that you're nourishing your body in that postpartum period, then it's the way to go. Perhaps even baby shower gifts, you know, food vouchers and things like that can be more helpful than 1,000 grey baby grows.
Absolutely. That they probably don't even get to wear anyway.
Yeah. And when they do, they just vomit all over them.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, that brings us in really nicely, Jen, to the subject of sleep deprivation, which I know we've kind of touched on. But actually, when you are sleep deprived, the last thing you want to be doing is cooking anyway. And then you're more likely to reach for the kind of takeaway menu and things like that that creep into bad habits. And I feel like I understand this a little bit already, even though I haven't had our baby, from years of night shifts. I know that when I'm tired, I eat my sleep, and I eat my sleep with chocolate and biscuits and takeaways. So actually having that stash of pretty much ready meals but cooked nutritionally by someone else can be really helpful when you're navigating that sleep deprivation as well, I guess.
Absolutely. Like I knew, and again, hindsight's a wonderful thing, because I've done this twice before. I know exactly what I do, and I do exactly what you just said. And I remember with my first son, I was so tired, and I would get up and I would just eat half a block of chocolate as breakfast, you know, and it just ends up, you end up feeling so much worse, you know. So preparation is everything. And if you can't do that preparation, then yeah, having something to bring it in, because sleep deprivation, like, it is something that we have to battle as parents. Like, it's broken sleep, it's inevitable. Our babies do need to feed around the clock. So it's about being practical and going, okay, I am going to be tired. So what do I need to make myself feel better while I'm sleep deprived? Well, I need to prioritize rest. And rest doesn't always mean sleep. It can just mean resting, like lying on the bed with bub, sideline while you're feeding, you know, like taking those opportunities. If you can get naps in every day, amazing. But, you know, going to bed early and good sleep hygiene, drinking all the water, eating well, because all of those things are going to help with your sleep quality and help with your energy levels when you're awake, despite the lack of sleep. So it's just so important, because, and I think the interesting thing to always, like, we always sort of see, like, I'm 14 weeks into having Georgie, and I said to my husband recently that it's only been the last few weeks that the sleep deprivation's really hit me, where I've started to just feel like, you know, I'm just tired. Like, and you get up and you're okay. But it's just this, it's like you've been going at it now for 3 months, and it's like, yeah, you've got to prep. It's a long-term game. So you've got to prep and look after yourself from the get-go.
That's really great advice. I think, like you say, especially in those first sort of few weeks, you're still a little bit adrenaline pumped from kind of what you've gone through, and it's all new and you're navigating it. But then as you get more and more down the line, it's a bit like, oh, we still had another broken night's sleep. Exactly. You can kind of only rally for so long, can't you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's sort of like, you know, that adrenaline wears off, and you sort of get into that everyday humdrum, like, of daily life, and you've got to get back into life and do all of the things. And yeah, it's just about knowing that it is that long-term game. So how can you look after yourself to make sure you've still got, like, you're prioritizing yourself, self-care for that, you know, marathon.
Definitely. And rest is something that for some reason we end up feeling guilty about doing. And I know I'm totally in that camp sometimes. But actually, when you've given birth and gone through pregnancy, it's almost like we forget this crazy journey that your body's been on and is still going on. And actually, we need to just be like, let's just take check a minute. Let's be okay with resting, and actually realizing that resting is super productive, especially in that postpartum period. We are just taking a short break from this week's episode to introduce you to one of this season's sponsors, Child's Farm. Baby skin is so sensitive and precious. It's important to me to use only the most naturally derived and gentle products for my baby. That's why I have chosen to use Child's Farm for Finley, and I'm delighted that they are sponsoring this season's podcast. The products are dermatologist and pediatrician approved to be suitable for sensitive skin and are also safe for people who may be prone to eczema. So we can be sure our little one's skin is kept as gorgeous as they are. And I'm so excited to let you know that as a listener of this podcast, you can currently get an exclusive 25% off Child's Farm products on their website using the code MIDWIFEPIP25.
Yeah, and you know what I fell into this trap once again is, like, it did actually make me feel better, but I probably injected myself into exercise too quickly afterwards again. Like, you know, I think women are sort of triggered by that postpartum body and things are a little bit, you know, floppy and you're not feeling your best. And so you sort of think, oh, I'm going to start eating well, I'm going to start losing weight, I'm going to start exercising, but it's probably like there is plenty of time to do that. It's not I'd say it's just now at that 3 month mark that it's a good time to sort of get back into it. And I mean, everyone's different, aren't they? But, you know, rest is so important.
Definitely. Oh yeah. And underestimate it. And I often think if we had like another kind of surgery, so if we had, I don't know, a hip surgery or a knee surgery, you'd be quite comfortable with taking sort of 6 to 12 weeks off and resting. But when it comes to birth, we forget the trauma that actually happens to our bodies, and we're bleeding and recovering, and we've done it for like 9 months of changing our body. But for some reason, we think a week later we should be back in the gym. But we kind of need to try and compare it to the earlier thing, I think.
That's right. Like, as you said, a knee surgery, you wouldn't blink an eye. Like, I think my husband had his ACL done. He didn't do anything for months. Like, but why do women just inject themselves back into it?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, while they're not sleeping and they're feeding a baby as well.
We can do a lot, ladies, but we can't do it all.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I've seen that quote on Instagram recently. It's like something like that. Yeah, we can do anything, but not everything.
Exactly. Like, you just got to choose what it is you really want to inject yourself into.
Yeah, 100%. So talking about that sleep deprivation, I went off on a tangent there. but how often, Jen, can we expect typically our new baby to be awake or asleep in the first sort of few weeks or months?
Yeah, I would say with daytime sleep, you're looking anywhere from 6 to 8 hours of daytime sleep. They tend to sleep a lot in the day. They can just get quite wakeful when it comes to the evening. So, you know, in an overall day, you're looking at around sort of 16 to 18 hours of sleep across the whole day. That varies because there's babies that have high sleep needs and lower sleep needs. And so in terms of naps, that might be spread out over around 4 to 5 naps, I'd usually say. And then nighttime sleep, you're looking at probably feeding still roughly around every 3 hours or so. Again, massively varies depending on women's breast milk capacity, if you're formula feeding, all sorts of different things going on. In terms of nap length, they can vary anywhere from around 30 minutes where it's just a short nap, or naps can go for as long as, you know, 3-4 hours at a time. I usually say to families in the first, especially when these days and nights are mixed up, I try and encourage families to just gently, you know, poke the baby a little bit. If it's getting to that sort of 4 hours from the last feed, I find that babies do feed so much better when they just feed to demand. So waking them too soon can be quite counterproductive because they probably won't feed well anyway. But if you can, if they're starting to get to that, you know, 4 hours since that the start of the last feed, it can be useful just to give them that little poke, because otherwise they are going to need to feed a lot at some point. And preferably if we can not make that at midnight for you, that would be ideal. But
that sounds, you know, good.
That would be lovely. So, you know, sometimes just giving them, usually around that 4 hour mark anyway, they're pretty hungry. So usually you're pretty safe to start to stir them by that point.
That's a great tip. I love that. And I guess that means that hopefully you avoid getting to that point where you're trying to feed a baby that is ravenous. And that can be a challenge as well. Once they've kind of, it's like us, when we get over hungry and we're just hangry, and actually then trying to navigate feeding them can be really challenging as well, can't it? As much as if they're not hungry enough and they're not bothered.
Exactly, because a hungry baby is a very upset baby, and then very upset babies don't attach so well. So, yeah,
Amazing. Good tips, Jen. I am taking note. And then how can we kind of best support their sleep needs as a parent? Is there like an environment that we can set up and things like that?
Yeah, I think that the biggest things, especially in the early weeks, to try and aim for is respecting those awake windows that I mentioned. So, you know, it goes from 45 minutes of awake time to about an hour and 15 minutes by 6 weeks. And then it sort of stretches to an hour and a half by 3 months. So being aware of awake windows is so very important, because then you're avoiding the overtired baby. So there's that. There is the feeding, because hungry babies are not going to feed well, sleep well, I should say. But they're also, we also don't want to be overfeeding them, and that's going to be leading to, you know, the wind and all of those sorts of things. But nice full bellies, getting those awake times right. And I think when it comes to sleep environment, it's pretty, like I actually talk about in the first 6 weeks, try and have your baby sleep out in the natural. I'm pointing around at the moment, but it's actually 8 p.m. at night and it's dark here, so not a good example. But in the middle of the day, having the lights open. So, you know, lots of natural light, because the way the circadian rhythm is going to regulate where the days become the days and the nights become the nights is going to be by exposing them to as much natural light as possible. So in the first 6 weeks, that environment is ideal. Once they've woken up, move into a more, you know, like how we like to sleep. It's, you know, like I don't know very many people that like to sleep with lights on or with the sun streaming through the window. So when we go to bed, we tend to draw the blinds, we close the curtains. Darkening that room for our baby is also going to be really useful. And some babies really love that continuation of all of the noise that they heard when they were in utero. So something like white noise and things like that can be really useful. But not all babies need that. Like some babies, I know for me, we use white noise because I've got two older boys, the barrel around this house, and it's all like Georgie would wake at every little noise if I didn't have that going. So for us, that's a very useful tool for us to use. But that is the biggest things, I think, is focusing. And also, I think when it comes to settling, understanding that your baby's first 3 months is an extension of pregnancy. It is the fourth trimester. And expecting a lot of your baby's going to sleep the best when they're on you, you know, those contact naps. And that's obviously not ideal at the nighttime. Like, I definitely, it's going to be better for your sleep. And I mean, I don't know what the guides for safe sleeping are over in the UK, but we talk a lot about in Australia, you know, having bub having their own sleep space, back to sleep, all of those sorts of things. And it means for a better sleep for you too, I think, because you're not worrying about, you know, if bub's right there. But if you do safe, if you do co-sleep or bed share, I should say, it's even just about having those safe, you know, situation or bed setup organized so that you're not just throwing bub into bed under the doona cover and all of those sorts of things. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they're the biggest things, I think, is looking at making sure bub's nice and full, respecting those awake windows, and in terms of the environment, nice and bright the first 6 weeks, and then moving towards a darker environment in the, you know, 6 weeks and beyond.
I love that. That's really useful, because I think often we would think even for those daytime naps about creating a dark environment, but like you say, actually you want them to learn that it's the daytime. So right. Actually allowing them to build that rhythm, that's a great one. And just talking about the Slay for Sleeping, there's an amazing website in the UK, I'm not sure if it's in Australia, called the Lullaby Trust, that I always recommend new or expectant parents have a little read of. And I was really lucky on the second season of the podcast, I'm joined by Stella, who's one of the workers from the Lullaby Trust. So if anyone wants to look into a little bit more about safer sleeping, highly recommend those two resources, because obviously it's a really important, it's a horrible thing to have to consider as an expectant parent, but a really important thing to kind of educate yourself on as well.
Absolutely.
So interaction with these babies. So when they are awake, or be that maybe not so often in the earliest days, what interaction is important in that kind of early newborn period? So I guess we want to try and help support their kind of healthy development and meeting some of those early milestones. What kind of things should we be doing?
Oh, it's beautiful, those early weeks, because what you are looking for is just those lovely interactions. It is the eye contact. It's skin to skin. If you throw in a little bit of, you know, like we talk about tummy time and things like that, but when it comes to tummy time, we're not expecting these new little babies to be on the floor and doing their thing, lifting themselves up. It is tummy time on you. It's bub being up here on your chest and just lying on your chest with you, semi-reclined or reclined, and then just having that opportunity to really have small efforts in being able to lift up their neck and lift up their head and doing it in a way that, you know, is close to mum or dad. But it is, and it's just the, like, as I said, the best thing that you can do with your baby is just to have them, they can only see, they can, their vision is very much developing in the first 3 months. They can't see further than 30 centimeters away from you in those first 6 weeks. And even then things are blurry, but they can recognize your face regardless. They can recognize your voice, and having them close to you and just speaking to them. This is the begin. It's the beginning. It's the beginning of this speech and receptive language and all of those amazing developmental skills. But it only has to be simple. One thing that we did do early on with Georgie was use contrast cards, so babies can see black and white, and then the next color to come in is red. So there's really great contrast cards that you can download for free from the internet. And that's really good for developing their eyesight. But honestly, if in the first 6 weeks, the only thing that you do is skin to skin contact, look at your baby, smile at them, goo goo gaga, which I don't think you have to tell very many parents to do this. They're just doing it themselves. If that's what you do, you are kicking goals, and that is well and truly meeting all their developmental needs.
Amazing, Jen. That's really helpful to hear, because I think sometimes you feel like we need to be like, you know, researching all these different games we should be playing or things we should be saying, but actually just, I guess, just being there and having that interaction. And I guess using times, even like when you're changing their nappy, you know, use that as a little time to sort of have a little chat and look at them and things like that.
It's beautiful too, because I mean, they just develop so quickly. And like, you know, I just walk around the house and I'll just sing. Like, so I think, and my mum does the same. So clearly it's passing down from generation to generation. So it's very organic for me to just be singing to the kids and singing to Georgie. And, you know, we start to do sort of bicycle legs with her. And so she's only 14 weeks. So that, like, it really does evolve. And, you know, you've just got to do what feels right. Because for some people, walk around the house singing doesn't, you know, that's not what comes naturally to them. But perhaps it's about sitting down, and it's never too early to read books. Never. Like, I've already started reading books to, and I had definitely done it with the kids, but you don't, like, I think the biggest thing to take away is you don't have to. You can just simply do these simple things, and your baby will be getting all of the developmental input and sensory input and all of those things that they need.
Amazing. I think if I was walking around singing in the house, Jen, my neighbours would complain. But oh, I do chat.
Definitely not a good voice here.
I love it. That's really, really helpful. Now, Jen, you've shared loads of tips with us, so I am super grateful, and we'll definitely be taking some of those away in our parenting journey. But I wonder if you could just share a 3 top tip summary to parents for those early days. Now, I know it's always hard narrowing it down to 3 when you're so knowledgeable, but let's see how we go.
Yeah, and I think that, like, this was actually really good because I'm so fresh out of it. I was like, what was it that was the most important thing for you, like, having just come out of it? And for me, it was taking those first 40 days, and I probably got a little bit, you know, restless around the 4-week mark, I'm not going to lie, but that first 6 weeks of just taking it slow. And even though I'm a lactation consultant, like, we had breastfeeding issues at the start, just, you know, bub getting used to attachment, all of those things. So spending those early days, that if you're planning on breastfeeding, that's your role, those first 40 days to be at home, slow down. Your job is to rest, learn how to feed your baby, whether it's breast or bottle, and get to know them. So I think that's my biggest tip when it comes to the start. The second one is, and we've covered it as well, but it's about asking for help. And it's not, you know, we always hear about, yep, let's call them meal trains. But like one thing that practically really helped me in the early days is I've been breastfeeding, but my husband, I'd go to bed at 9 o'clock or, you know, 8:30 sometimes at night, and he'd actually do the first feed. So it meant that I'd have to pump milk and then, but he'd do that first feed. I would sleep for 6 hours, like straight, which is heaven when you're a new mum. So like, yes, sometimes it meant that I then had to pump, and, you know, you don't want to do it too soon into your breastfeeding journey if you're struggling with engorgement or just getting the hang of things and all those sorts of things. But that's a really practical way of getting that help in. So is even just delegating that feed so that you get a little bit of extra rest, even if it's not every night and just once a week. And I think then that the third one is to establish a bedtime routine or rhythm as soon as you can. So I think I actually shared a reel on Instagram of Georgie, and she would have only been about 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And it was just a really simple rhythm. So again, this wasn't timed like I spoke about at the start. It all based on when she woke from her last nap, but it would always go feed from one side, bath, feed from the other side. Into the sleeping bag, and then feed it to the other side and into bed. And so like, it's just a very simple rhythm that we had to our night. It wasn't based on exact times or anything like that, but it was a great way to wind her down. And babies don't need to be bathed every day, so you could absolutely alternate it with even just a body massage. But whatever suits you and your family, just creating some rhythm. And it's good for you as well, I think, because your baby learns so quickly what, you know, it, from a very early age, Georgie, you could tell that she knew that bath time meant that it was like the end of the day. Like, they're so clever. Just creating some sort of rhythm that helps you to help to signify the end of the day. And it's a really great way to, relax your baby and relax you leading up into bedtime.
That's a great tip, especially it allows that little bit of bonding time as well, doesn't it, towards the end of the day, and everyone just sort of starts to calm down. And especially if you feel like your routine has completely exploded, actually just having that little bedtime rhythm like you explained is quite a nice little bit of control in an uncontrolled environment.
Yeah, and that's it. It's like, it's not like we're like, okay, 6 o'clock, it's bath time. It's, you know, every day would be a little bit different for us. But it was just something that we knew how the end of the day went. That's, I think, the best way to put it, is we knew how the end of the day went.
Yeah, which is nice. That gives you a little bit of structure, a little bit. Jen, thank you so much for your time. I am super grateful. And for those of you who want to check out more of Jen's wonderful resources, especially for those early parenting days, you'll find her Instagram page linked in the bio of this podcast. So please check that out, because yeah, there is lots of wisdom and top tips to be taken from Jen's content. So thank you so much for joining us, Jen. I am very grateful. I know you are navigating a crazy lockdown parenting new baby life. So thank you for coming on and sharing all your tips and knowledge with us.
No, I've absolutely loved it. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you found it helpful, then please hit subscribe and leave a review. It really does make a huge difference to the number of women I can reach out to and empower with this information. For more daily free information, inspiration, or details on my bespoke antenatal education courses or your pregnancy journey course, then head over to my website, www.midwifepip.com, and check out my Instagram page at midwife_pip. Thank you, and see you next time.